in cross-section in the figure. These tabs make electrical contact to the end of the tube and also make contact with the faces of adjacent anvils, correction, with a pair of adjacent anvils through which the heating current passes. Prisms of pyrophyllite located at the ends of the sample tube.
This is beautiful.
Provide thermal insulation. A thermocouple spot welded to the sample container are passing through the walls or interior of the container is used to measure temperature. The thermocouple leads are brought out through the edges of the tetrahedron in the space between the anvils. Friction of the pyrophyllite gasket on the fine wires is sufficient to hold them in place during high pressure operation. Several electrical leads may be inserted into the sample area without difficulty. It is helpful to sandwich the thermocouple wire between two thin sections of pyrophyllite, correction, between two wafers of pyrophyllite whose total thickness is such as to initially fill the space, correction, whose total thickness is initially equal to the distance between the sloping sides of adjacent anvil faces, correction, of the sloping anvils. This serves to provide a gasket in the region where the thermocouple wires emerge from the tetrahedron without waiting for a gasket to be formed by extrusion of the tetrahedron edges as the anvils advance. If this is not done, there is some difficulty with the initial lab extrusion.
At this stage of the tape, there was a break, and there's a piece missing. Play. It's not, is it sat down on that? No, it goes the other way.
The anvils are then simultaneously forced together by hydraulic rams. Prior to centering the pyrophyllite tetrahedron on the anvil faces, the exposed lava surfaces, correction, the exposed pyrophyllite surfaces of the tetrahedron have been painted with red iron oxide to increase the surface friction. Since the triangular faces of the pyrophyllite tetrahedron are larger than the triangular anvil faces. Some pyrophyllite is forced between the sloping sides of the anvils, and a gasket is automatically formed. Continued motion of the anvils compresses gasket and tetrahedron, and consequently the sample. At this point, it would be well to mention the relative compression of this device. By relative compression, I mean the ratio of the volume swept out by the advance of the anvil faces compared to the initial volume of the pyrophyllite tetrahedron assembly. If this ratio is too small, the relative compression will not be great enough to build pressure within the sample space, to build the desired pressure within the sample space. Before the first tetrahedral anvil device was built and tested, this was a question that remained to be answered. Because the volume to be compressed was considerably higher than the volume to be compressed in the Bridgman anvil device. Experience with the tetrahedral anvil device has shown, however, that the volume decrease caused by advance of the anvils is sufficient to reach pressures of at least 135,000 atmospheres within the diagonal cylindrical volume within the tetrahedron, when the ratio of the tetrahedron volume to the volume of the cylindrical hole is of the order of 16:1. When this volume ratio is maintained, the pressure generated in a hydrostatic specimen does not depend upon the compressibility of that specimen. As long as the specimen is not compressed by a factor greater than about 5 at the highest available pressures. Pressure calibration of the tetrahedral anvil device is made by substituting a silver chloride rod containing a pressure sensing wire for the specimen. The pressure sensing wire makes electrical contact with the metal tabs. The resistance of the pressure sensing wire is then measured as a function of the hydraulic ram load. Correction. As a function of the force applied to the anvils. Certain materials, such as bismuth, thallium, cesium, and barium, undergo abrupt changes in electrical resistance at pressures previously determined by P.W. Bridgman. Refer to Bridgman article. When these transitions are observed to occur, the corresponding force on the anvils is recorded. And a calibration plot of pressure versus force on anvils
is
established.
Yeah, it's our symphony.
When this plot, correction, this plot is found to be a straight line for the tetrahedral anvil device. And when once established, the force on the anvils can be taken as a measure of the pressure being exerted by the pyrophilite on the walls of the cylindrical chamber. Correction. On the walls of the cylindrical sample chamber. The question often arises as to the effect of sample heating on increasing the pressure within the sample chamber. Calculation shows that at pressures above 10,000 atmospheres, heating of any type of sample to temperatures as high as 2,000 degrees C causes a rise in pressure that is less than the estimated error by which the pressure is known. A conservative estimate.
In the light of research since then, are you still
indicates that pressures
still hold water?
In the tetrahedral anvil device are known within plus or minus 5%. In making a pressure calibration, it will be noted that the transitions in bismuth, thallium, cesium, and barium previously referred to occur at a much lower loading on release of load than on increasing load. This is due to the hysteretic properties of the pyrophilite. Normally, pressure calibration is based on measurements made with increasing load. Consequently, during experiments in which the pressure is a variable, measurements are taken in one direction only, namely, on increasing load. Relative resistance changes occurring in the calibration materials mentioned are shown in Figure 9. The transition in bismuth had 121,000 atmospheres.
Back finally to Figure 9.
Is a new transition recently discovered by F.P. Bundy. Next reference number. Questions are often asked as to the relative merits of tetrahedral anvils as compared to cubic anvils. In a cubic anvil system, six anvils with square faces would surround a pyrophyllite cube. Such an arrangement might offer some advantages in geometry, correction, in providing more simple geometry. While a cubic anvil system is satisfactory for many purposes, tetrahedral anvils provide optimum conditions in regards to maximum pressures obtainable and maximum lifetime of apparatus. For anvils with equal face areas and equal gasket thickness, cubic anvils must advance a distance 61% greater to obtain the same relative compression that is obtained with tetrahedral anvils. Furthermore, the principle of massive support achieves its maximum value when regular geometrical solids are considered in the tetrahedral anvil apparatus. Conclusion. The devices that have been discussed illustrate five means that have been utilized to obtain pressures greater than are possible with a simple piston and cylinder apparatus. They are: 1. The principle of massive support. 2. The obtaining of relative motion by means of a compressible gasket. 3. The obtaining of relative motion by means of new mechanical design. 4. The obtaining of a multi-stage effect within a single stage. A fifth means of obtaining higher pressures applicable to any apparatus would be the development of materials with improved compressive strengths. semicolon, i.e., comma, materials with compressive strengths greater than that possessed by the cemented tungsten carbides. The use of the massive support principle has been illustrated in the Bridgman anvil, tetrahedral anvil, stepped piston, Blackhawk special, girdle, and Drickamer design. Motion by means of compressible gasket is necessary in the Bridgman, tetrahedral anvil, and Drickamer design. Motion is obtained by means of new mechanical design in the stepped piston, Blackhawk special, and girdle devices. Multi-staging within a single stage is utilized in the Drickamer design and is partially evident in the tetrahedral and girdle devices. In the tetrahedral device, each of the anvils tends to support the other anvils. And in the girdle design, the tapered piston tends to support the tapered chamber, and the tapered chamber tends to support the piston, thus giving a partial multi-stage effect. More effective utilization of the fundamental principles just enumerated, coupled with the use of new engineering materials possessing improved compressive strengths, suggests that static pressures as high as 500,000 atmospheres are foreseeable in the not too distant future. Note to myself, add something concerning the design of binding rings, and also concerning the necessity of designing small, very high tonnage rams, and discuss our multi-stage high tonnage ram. Mention the belt someplace in here. Another device, the belt apparatus, was devised by the author in 1954.
53.
In connection with his work on the synthesis of diamonds. This device is capable of reaching pressures approaching 200,000 atmospheres simultaneously with sustained temperatures greater than 2,000 degrees centigrade. All rights to this device are owned by the General Electric Company, and in addition, it is covered by an order of secrecy by the U.S. government. Therefore, up to the present time, the details of its construction have not been disclosed. Acknowledgement. The author gratefully acknowledges the financial grants to the high pressure research program at Brigham Young University made by the National Science Foundation, the Carnegie Institution of Washington, the DuPont Company, and the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation.
Do you want to make a note as to when the date is?
This is a note. Today is the 9th of November of 1983. Ida Rose is busy going through older tapes. Our first tape machine had large reels, and this machine we still own. I guess we've had it for 10, 15, maybe 20 years. It's broken and won't work anymore, so she has borrowed Tom Cheney's machine, and we are recording from his machine on these large reel tapes to the new modern cassette tapes, simply by having our tape cassette recorder listen to Tom Cheney's machine. So as you occasionally hear talk going on other than the recording, that's just Ida Rose and I talking. But there is a problem in that these old tapes are fragile
and brittle,
and they keep breaking on us, and so we've had quite a time getting this particular dictation onto the cassette tape, and there will be gaps because of the broken out parts of the old tape. Now this dictation for a scientific article had to have taken place sometime around 1959, because there was still a secrecy order, as was mentioned on the tape, and the secrecy order on the tetrahedral apparatus and on the belt apparatus was not
lifted
until sometime in 1960. So at this point in time, the belt could not be described. Now, this girdle that I mentioned was a design of Wendell Wilson's he kept piecing things together, and more and more was developing a device that looked like the belt. He didn't quite get there, but he almost did. He visited me frequently, asking questions of me and asking questions other places. And there had been leaks concerning the nature of the belt, and he came pretty close to actually getting the belt. He used a somewhat different principle, but it was getting close. And I was really worried at that time that I would never get to publish the details of the belt apparatus because I'd be scooped on that. And I sort of was in this girdle of Wendell Wilson's. And there are people to this day who still call what is really the belt, they call it the girdle.